understanding of religion is that there's going to be two manifestations.
Translations?
Two manifestations.
Processions, right?
Yes. Right. Who are coming, like return of John the Baptist and return of the Christ, or return of Qa'im and Raj'at al-Husayni, both of them. As far as Mirza Ghulam Ahmad is concerned, first of all, I want to know if beside Mirza Ghulam Ahmad, anybody else came to prepare people for his coming, like, or he was the only one, and he was the John the Baptist or the Christ.
You see, when you got, when you get too much hooked onto these conventional concepts of the one who precedes and one who follows and all that, that would never permit you to journey freely in the direction of God, because these are in fact inherent congenital problems of any society. They live by the, you know, twisted concept of religious jargon, not the religious jargon, but the twisted concept of religious jargon, which they have inherited generation after generation, and they want to reach the truth always through the same meandering path of very problematic understandings of religion on the part of their forefathers. They conceive an idea which seems to be good and attractive to them, but it may have some twists, may have some problems, difficulties, which they never confront as such, and pass the idea on to the second generation, and it goes on adding until the result that whenever a prophet of Allah, a messenger of God, does come, this, you know, the difficulties or the obstructions created for him to be accepted by the people normally are so many, which are inherited by generation, that whenever they start traveling back through the path carved by their elders, the path to reach, to lead to the truth, they find that it's impossible to travel along that path and reach anywhere, in fact. Now, this is a generalization, but now I'll particularize it and explain the whole thing to you. Then you'll understand the hazards of the journey you are attempting to undertake. See, each prophet, when he comes, he has been prophesied, his advent has been foretold, and the matter seems to be as simple as that. Like the Holy Quran says, you find the name of Muhammad mentioned in the Holy Bible, in the Old Testament, and his name Ahmad mentioned in the New Testament. So it's a simple, open and shut case. Why don't you accept him? But the generation who is addressed, they have already twisted the word Muhammad in a different way, the word Ahmad in a different way. And it is not a simple case for them at all to understand like this. They challenge this. They say, no, no, we don't find it mentioned in the Bible at all. Whatever is mentioned has already been fulfilled in the case of that prophet and that prophet and that prophet, and the case is closed, finished. So your inherited understandings of the prophecies are very dangerous to follow. Go back to the case of Jesus Christ. There, the example of Jesus Christ will perhaps more perfectly fit the question that you have raised. It was said that Jesus would come and he would be preceded by somebody who would prepare the world for accepting Jesus. His name would be Elijah or Elijah. He was a prophet of God who is mentioned in the Old Testament as having ascended to heaven, sitting on a fiery chariot, and rising before a companion of his saw him rising and disappear. It is said that he would descend again. It was said that he would descend just before the time of Christ, when Christ will be about to appear. It will be only then he would return back, sitting on the same chariot, and warn the world that the time of the Christ is near. Open up the locks of your hearts and doors of your hearts, and so on. Now, this was the reigning concept at the time of Jesus Christ. But taken literally, then there were prophecies about Jesus Christ that he would come with a crown over his head. He would liberate the children of Israel from the foreign yoke or any yoke. This was taken literally. Now, when Jesus came, nobody had seen Elijah sitting on a chariot descending from heaven. When Jesus came, nobody saw him with a crown over his head, giving a call for war of liberation against the Roman Empire. It was a very different Jesus who did come in person, a completely unrecognizable Jesus, if they went by what they had heard from their forefathers. So first you have to rectify the inherited expectations of the promised reformer. Go back and examine them critically and see, were your forefathers right in preparing you with these and those conditions for the acceptance of the newcomer, or will they obstruct the passage of any divine reformer, whoever comes and whenever he comes, if judged by the criterion which has been handed down to you? Now, the history of religion is unanimous on this. Every time a prophet was refused, and every time he was refused by the majority of the people, it was because of the twisted expectations. So why go by any twisted expectations at all? Why not go by the unanimous verdict of the history of the prophets as they appear? Now, you can expect a prophet to descend from heaven or to appear from the dead or appear from a cave somewhere. But if you study the history of prophethood, you will never find this happen anywhere in the world. So there are two things. One is expectations, as you mentioned. The other is the reality of prophethood. The reality of prophethood has a commonality, unbroken, without exception whatsoever. They all appear like ordinary human beings, born out of humble mothers. They do not make any tall claims, they live like ordinary children. The only thing common about them is that during their childhood, during their youth, they have never been alleged to have spoken lies or indulged in frivolous life. That is the law, which is a sound law, there is no question of any misinterpretation of this. Now, why don't you apply the same criterion to Mirza Ghulam Ahmad of Qadian, which is proven by the entire history of prophethood, instead of seeking things other than those? Why don't you study the Holy Quran in relation to the evidence produced by the Holy Quran in favor of Hazrat Muhammad Rasulullah? There you will find no bizarre phenomenon, no strange miracles supporting his case. It is exactly the same thing which I am mentioning you will find in the Holy Quran and nothing else. So that which stands for the master should stand also for the servant. And Imam Mahdi should be judged on the same criterion as his master, the Holy Founder of Islam, was judged. not by the people whom he addressed, but by the Quran itself. The Quranic argument is universal there. It is not specific. One thing I mentioned, the past of all the claimants who claim to be from God has to be clean. Otherwise, the doubts would appear. A man who is known to have told lies, known to have indulged in irresponsible behavior here and there, known to have usurped people of their rights and things, how can one day say that I have now reformed very well and now you should take my claim seriously that God has selected me? His past should be spotless and his future should be pocked with allegations. These are the two things, and the dividing line is only his claim that he has come from God. Psychologically, it's impossible to believe that a man with a complete clean past, when he claims that he is from God, suddenly he becomes the worst man on earth. All the worst allegations are, directed against him, and he is targeted with such bombardment of things, filthy things, that, as I said, his face appears to be pocked like no pocked face was ever witnessed by man. This is the criterion which has been presented by the Holy Quran. It says, قَدْ لَبِسْتُ فِيكُمْ عُمَرًا مِّنْ قَبْلِهِ أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ. O who want to judge the truth of my claim, why don't you see my clean past? Why don't you observe that? I have lived among you a long life, and you know what I am, what I have been. Wherever did you find a fault with me, as far as the basic human morals are concerned, accepted human values are concerned? If not, why don't you, use your reason and be wise to, behave wisely, أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ. So these are the criterions which stand above censure. You can always trust them. They will never fail you. So instead of what you have heard about the prophets, how they come, whether they have bones or not, they show miracles of this sort or that sort, why don't we just remain limited to the criteria of truth offered by the presented by the Holy Quran in favor of Hazrat Muhammad Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? And those criteria are supported throughout the history by the history of all the prophets. So this is why when miracles were demanded, the Holy Quran said no. And the Western scholars failed to understand the significance of that, because they said the Holy Quran says Jesus Christ showed these miracles, Moses showed that miracles, such miracles, so why don't you produce those miracles? The Holy Quran does not lay any store by miracles in the sense that they never convince people whenever fulfilled. You see, the Holy Quran says that وَمَا يُشْرِكُمْ أَنَّا هَيْزَا جَعَاتْ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ قُلْ إِنَّمَا الْآيَاتُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. They demand from you, this was the demand of the non-believers from Hazrat Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, exactly in the same words as the same demand is addressed to Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad of Qadian. Exactly. The ulama here will tell you, ask them for one single miracle which he showed. Just one. And we will reconsider our position. This exactly was what was demanded from Hazrat Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The Holy Quran mentions it. Listen, they claim and they swear by God. The verse, I remember it, but just immediately,
I get it right.
Yes. it says that Vaqsamu billahi jahada. Vaqsamu billahi jahada imanahim. La in jaatum ayatul la yuminunna biha. They swear by God with the strongest swearing one can make, that even if this prophet brings a single sign from Allah, just one, la yuminunna biha, they will not demand from Allah. They will most certainly believe in him. Exactly the same thing is shouted at the top of the voices of the mullahs all over the world regarding Hazrat Masih Maud al-Islam. The answer is this, قُلْ إِنَّمَا الْآيَاتُ إِنْدَ اللَّهِ. Tell them that there are many signs with Allah, no shortage of signs. وَمَا يُشْرِكُمْ. But how can you we make you understand? لَإِنْ جَاتْهُمْ لَيُؤْمِنُونَ أَنَّهَا إِذَا جَاتْ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. Whenever these signs will come, they will not believe. Because in the past, exactly the same thing happened. Who believed in Jesus by seeing signs? Who believed in Moses after seeing signs? None. So these signs are just sort of academic exercises. They do not mean anything as far as the judgment of truth of a prophet is concerned. The criteria presented by the Holy Quran with reference to the unanimous religious history is the only worthy criteria to judge the claimant regarding his truth. And this is one of the signs I have told you. The Holy Quran doesn't present, you see, he is doing the same thing as Moses did, he is doing that thing as Jesus did. He says, no, just see to it. Come to your senses. This man has lived you as a child, grown into adulthood, until he reached the age of maturity, 40 years, when the age of passion begins to dwindle down. Did you find him ever committing a crime against humanity, against human moral values, ever telling lies? If yes, show us one evidence, bring one evidence that you really alleged him to do that, to have done it. A clean slate, absolutely. Now one night when he tells you that he's been appointed by God, suddenly you find fault in everything he says. So your own testimony stands against the future allegations. This is the beautiful point raised by the Quran. What a powerful argument, you know, absolutely indestructible. The 40 years of your witnessing is sufficient evidence of your falsehood and his truth. Because now when you say you are prejudiced and with colored eyeglasses you can't see anything rightly. When you are beginning, you have begun to see him or criticize him, it is in the light of your denial first and examination later. So this is one of the arguments in favor of Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam. He lived a life of 40 years and beyond in the presence of the entire Muslim community of India at least. And when he claimed, till that moment, all the ulama who knew him personally stood witness to the fact that he has been such a pious, holy man, dedicated entirely to the cause of Islam and God and humanity, that one of them said, if you have another like him, show us from the history of Islam. That was Muhammad Hussain Batalvi, who led the movement of hostility against him later on. But a day before this happened, this is what he was saying. So these are the real solid rational things by which you should go. And on this issue I have spoken so many times in various question and answer sessions. All the arguments which I have presented in favor of Masih Maud alayhi salam, founded on the Quranic statements, founded on the history of religion, must be given weight and must be preferred. If somebody is proved to be right from that, you know, approach, from that angle of examining his truth, then all the rest is meaningless. The rest is just small things, because they fall to the category of the similar objections and pinprickings and other things with relation to all the prophets of the world. Nobody's